My aunt's little ones are doing a 9-week course. And I mean, I know they're really Olic and stuff, but I just think it's kind of cruel. Because when she says sit, they sit. When she says come, they come. And now, she's teaching them tricks, like party tricks and stuff. I mean, it's exploitation. Come on, I mean, the poor dogs.
The combination meal, inspired by seven colors, is something for everyone. Nando's, fire it up.
This is CliffCentral.com.
I like this song. It's happy. Maroon 5, What Lovers Do, with SZA. That's her name, S-Z-A, yeah. SZA. She's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everybody's talking about her. She's like the singer on the block now.
She's the hot thing right now.
Right. Okay, so before we get to Prof Janssen, who's going to talk to us just now about matrix and varsity and all those very, very pertinent topics in South African society at the moment, let's get some news. Let's find out from Mubs what's going on. CliffCentral.com at just after 7 o'clock on the 12th of January.
All right, so here in this show, we are often very guilty of being super critical of various groups of individuals.
Speak for yourself, buddy.
Gareth had another go at millennials today.
Hey.
Well, you did. Ben, you are often critical of young children in the sense that you feel like they're babied, they're too soft. You made fun of kids who get, you know, things like participation awards at sports events.
My gripe's the parents, it's not right? The kids.
So, like,
it's like saying, damn you, Canvas, for being a shit painting.
Like I said, we are often critical of various groups of individuals on this show, and oftentimes we sound like those old people who start sentences with, well, back in my day.
Yeah.
So if I had to ask you the question, do you think that it is harder being a child or a teenager in school today than when you were in school?
Obviously today.
Okay, so you would say it's much harder.
A bajillion more distractions, yeah, and things to feel that you're not good enough at.
Because seven adults have gone undercover as high school students,
yeah,
for a new docuseries, an A&E documentary series. It's called Undercover High. Seven young adults went through some makeup changes. They even fitted one of them, a woman, with braces to them, you know, the guys shaved their beards. These guys are aged like 21 to 26 years old, but they kind of made them over, and they basically made them look like they are fresh, pimpled teenagers. And their mission was to go into school and to just kind of, you know, blend in with actual learners to try and find out whether it is tougher or not to be a student these days, a learner in high school these days compared to back in the day.
Wow, that's an that's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, the school in question is one at a Kansas high school. The name of the series is called Undercover High, if you want to check that out. And as the undercover students quickly learned, it is a lot more different being a high school student today than it was when you and I were in school. For starters, cell phone use is rampant throughout the school. And teachers often struggle to get students to put away their phones during class. Conflicts between students could easily fester online while teachers mm-hmm. were busy with their lessons. Now, bullying is something that has been in existence for a long time. That is not a new development. But think about what social media has done to bullying.
Yeah.
It's
ramped it up by 100%.
It's ramped it up far more. It's more in your face. You know, back in the day, if you were being bullied by Jeff, Jeff would bully you in a corner or on the playground.
But you could still go home and get away from Jeff.
You could still go home, and then that would be the end of Jeff. But now someone is standing, you know, around the corner filming Jeff doing things to you. He posts it onto his Twitter or his Facebook. It gets liked, it gets retweeted, it gets reposted. The next thing you know, you're a trending topic. Maybe some journalist picks it up as a news story. You know, so social media has also made it a lot worse for incidents like bullying.
I'll bet.
Yeah. And then also there's issues of depression, you know, drug use, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. Sexual assault or sexual images, you know, again, because of cell phones, all sorts of images of learners.
I used to have to imagine what the girls in my class looked like naked.
Well, these days, you
pretty much find a nude of anybody.
Well, there you go. All that has to happen is your girlfriend or your conquest sends you a picture of her boobs.
Right.
The next thing you know, the guy has shared them with all of his friends in his WhatsApp group. And so basically the overall judgment here is that it is a lot harder being a high school student or even a primary school student today than it ever was back in our day.
Well, I wonder if our guest this morning will agree on that, but there's so much to discuss with him that I want to book him for like 3 hours of his time at some point, because if he even has 3 hours somewhere in his schedule. He got back from San Francisco just earlier this week. He's been at Stanford for some time. He used to be the vice chancellor of Free State University. He's now starting at Stellenbosch. And Prof. Janssen, it's a pleasure to speak to you again. It's we've missed you so much, you can't believe it.
How are you?
I'm fine. If we could just get this a little bit louder, you can get a bit close to the phone, then I think we won't have a problem. How are you, Prof?
No.
Yeah.
I'm good. Thanks for the mic.
That's much better. Thank you. So, Prof, first of all, welcome back to South Africa. You've come in at the most fractious and complicated and difficult time of the year for anyone in education. And you've written so many books about teachers. You've done so many research papers into education in South Africa. You've written endless columns, all of them very valuable to our ongoing conversation about what education in South Africa could be like, where the pitfalls are, and what the individual at the juncture of going from high school into university has to deal with. You're probably the most qualified person to talk about this, but I read your article just the other day on grade 12 pupils and what they need to know about their matric pass. And I thought it was so salient, and you went straight to the heart of the issue. Would you like to just explain for people who might have missed it what the thrust of that article was, and then we can talk about it?
Okay, I forget which one that was. I think it was a retweeted one from a couple of years ago.
It's called Dear Grade 12 Pupil, and you basically you address what a matric pass is worth and what the standards are that are applied.
No, sure. Look, I think the general points I often make is that, as I did last night to the top matriculants from the Winelands region in the Western Cape, was to say to them, don't get too excited. You've passed in a system that allows for 30% and 40% passes in three subjects each, in which life orientation is the subject, in which many of you do mathematical literacy, in which it is actually quite difficult to fail. You really have to make an effort, to not get through. So let's be honest here that this doesn't say anything, and that is why half of you will fail in your first year. We know that now from the data. When you get to university. So congratulations, you've got a bachelor's pass. That's fine. Now the hard work begins, okay? But be realistic. You're going to have to work harder than you ever did before. You're going to have to realize there are no prelims, okay, to basically give you the exam questions in another format. You have to understand there's nobody going to stand behind you and kick your butt and tell you, to show up, etc. And by the way, if getting through university is the only thing you wish to do as a new matriculant, then I don't think, you should waste your time listening to people like me, because I think you should set not government standards for your achievements, but but global standards. Instead of saying, I want to become the best optometrist or the best teacher or the best accountant in the world. And that means changing completely the frame of reference that you use for success.
Prof, do you think that things, Mabali and I were just talking about how high school life is so much more difficult now because of this ability for you to kind of zoom in on people's lives, and people can connect via technology like never before. There are more distractions than ever before. Do you think that the problems that we're experiencing now in secondary and tertiary education are most of them are the system's fault, or most of them are the individuals who are trying to adapt to change? I mean, where do you think that the biggest problems are coming in?
Okay, so it depends very much which schools you're talking about. So if you're talking about, the distractions of technology and so on and so forth, you're probably talking about suburban schools, which I don't spend a lot of time on because it's a very small minority of our schools. We we're talking about the school I wrote about this week. He said he's at Kabane in Port Elizabeth, where the auditor and teachers for life sciences and mathematics. They have a different, then the last, the least of your problems is the destruction of technology. They are just getting somebody in front of the class to teach and teach well. So I don't know where the schools are actually. These schools are fairly resilient organizations, you know, and I don't know whether they are fundamentally different today from what they still, you know, force feed kids. They still, you know, mainly based their pedagogy on rote learning. They still, you know, have very low expectations for achievement. So I think the big problem that we face now in the majority of our schools is having a reliable and predictable timetable for teaching, you know. And unless you ensure that for all our children, then, you know, Andrew's picture, as I called it yesterday, Thursday, not Thursday, coming, is really meaningless, you know, for the majority of our children.
So, Prof, it's as basic as that. Like, the teachers have got to stick to the schedule and the students have to pitch. Is it that simple?
It is, actually. You know, I mean, I was a teacher in the South African school system. I taught in rural schools, you know, in a fishing village. I taught in District 6 as it was coming down. So I have seen the most challenging of circumstances for our children. Yeah. But if you show up, and I don't just mean showing up physically, I mean showing up emotionally, showing up spiritually, showing up in a way that kid knows that you are fully invested in their future, then you can teach any kid to become great, okay? Whether or not you have a science lab, whether or not there's a well-stocked library. So my experience having taught in the, you know, on the challenging end of the spectrum is that with a really good, I mean, there's a reason that more than 90% of our national budget for schools goes to teacher salaries. There's a reason. That is the make or break factor in the future of the lives of children, and especially poor children. You know, the kid, again, in the upper middle class school can go home, use the internet, dad and mom can help, you know, with the assignments. But for most of our kids, that is not a privilege they enjoy.
Prof, a lot of people talk about how much money is spent in education, and the politicians always say to us they need more money, and it's a resources problem. You're saying it's the teachers that we need to have present, the pupils we need to have present, and a real connection and a communication between the two. Are there other things that come into this, like, you know, the difficulties that people are having in their personal lives? We know South Africa is a very fractured and broken society at certain levels. And when it comes to the family, there aren't always strong male role models. There aren't always safe and secure feelings and situations at home. There isn't always food. I mean, these are some very, very basic things that before we can tackle the complicated stuff, we need to address. Do you think we're making any progress, or do you think we've slipped backwards?
Okay, so let me just tell you, I'm a comparativist, right? So I study schools in other countries in part to understand our own better, okay? One of those social challenges and economic problems, et cetera, you would find in Zimbabwe, you would find in Mozambique, you would find in Botswana, you know? You'd find in Oakland, California, where I just thought, you know, you'd find that in horrible, challenging places. But all of that is compensated for when you have a competent and committed teacher, you know, who takes on, by the way, not just the problems of teaching mathematics, but also of caring for you as a person, as a whole person. So I don't think we should be so distracted, because South Africans are in the world at playing victim. You know, we are so bloody good. You know, somebody just looks at you and you want to fall apart, you want to melt, you know. And you have every excuse for why this kid shouldn't do well. Now, I tell you, I taught at probably the wealthiest school in the world last week, you know, in Palo Alto, California. Mm-hmm. And I also taught in the West school. You know, the only thing that's different between those kids and our children here in dysfunctional schools is the structure of opportunity. You give any child the same opportunity. And by that I mean a teacher is present. And your problem goes away. Yeah. So I'm not under, you know, valuing the importance of equal infrastructure that must be done as a matter of social justice. I don't deny that we need to feed our children and make sure they can concentrate on learning. All of those things we acknowledge, and probably we do fairly well, especially in school nutrition. But at the end of the day, you can do all of those social welfare functions, but if a teacher doesn't stand up there, competently teach you to A, believe in yourself and to succeed, then of course all the other things don't matter.
Well, also, we've got to be able to at some point realize that the role of schools and of teachers is not to be social workers, it's actually to teach. And I think a lot of the time, because we have such need in society, we try to ascribe responsibilities to people who are not responsible for those areas because there's just such dire circumstance. That doesn't mean that teachers need to be social workers or that would be their greatest contribution.
No, I agree with that. And, you know, we should really, tip our hats to teachers. Teachers here love them,
Yeah.
I mean, then if you've ever gone to take a township, my Lord. You know, you sort of have a 50% chance of surviving the school year and just being alive.
Wow.
On your way to school. So these are really difficult circumstances. But again, we can focus on each and every one. We can focus on the gangsters. We can focus on the drugs. We can focus on every other thing. At the end of the day, what I experienced having grown up in these areas is if you're in a safe space called a classroom and you've got a dedicated teacher and you are able to that teacher sets horizons for you way beyond what you expect to see, and so on. Then, of course, you're talking about life-changing experiences. And I've seen that for so many poor students in so many schools. I can keep you busy here for 3 or 4 hours, just with a long list of names of kids who are not supposed to make it. You can do this, not just for individuals. You can do this for the system. But it needs to then begin with an understanding, that you have to deal with South African military teachers union. You have to deal with this constant interruption of educational politics. You've got to deal with the lethargy in the culture of black schooling,
Yeah. Prof, you've come in at a time where there's obviously, and this is nothing new, you've been in the university system in South Africa for long enough to know that every January and February, shit just goes down. We've got a situation now where people are talking about free education at a tertiary level, and I know you've got some very strong thoughts on these. Do you want to just share what you think the current circumstances will precipitate, and whether you think that there is a potential solution to this crisis that tertiary education is being plunged into by politicians?
Yeah. Look, my position's always been, we haven't seen and counseled and indeed supported poor students in our education. I really do believe that for a poor student, there should be free higher education. That is, that student should get tuition waivers, accommodation waivers, and if necessary, also waivers on things like textbooks and the additional costs that goes with higher education.
Mm-hmm.
But that's for poor kids. Okay, that's for poor working class kids. But my children must pay. Your children, you have any must pay.
Yeah.
Middle class kids must pay because that's how you cross subsidize in a poorly funded system, so that others who have less privilege are able to succeed. That is actually quite possible within the first place, if we did some good planning. The problem is that we have politicians making bold statements like free higher education, and the fine print gets lost in these papers. This is the kind of chaos, that you see at the beginning of this academic year. So I think it is perfectly possible, and I think it is perfectly just, to be able to make sure that poor students don't bear the burden, of debt, and that they are supported to get through. Having said that, Garrett, let's also never forget, education is never free. Even if you pay everything in terms of what a student needs to go to university, there's a lot that is foregone. There's a lot that you give up, in order to, for example, giving up a job to support your family, in poor areas of the country. So it's never really free. Somebody always pays for education. And so I just wish there was less politics in this debate and simply taking care of the poor and the working class people and making sure everybody else pays.
Yeah, Prof, one of the factors here that people get uncomfortable talking about is the very detrimental role that unions have played, and maybe they still do. I don't know. You can be the one who can gauge this for me or not. But, you know, you talk about great teachers, and there are great teachers in South Africa. You've written books about them. And there are also teachers that we don't know about that go under the radar that are working hard every single day for each of their pupils. But there are also a ton of really bad teachers who are represented and protected by unions. And this is a major problem in our education system. It leads to huge trouble.
No, this is serious, you know, because we have very big data, and depending on the year of study, you know, it's been shown that a child in a township school gets a third of the instructional time of a kid in, you know, a well-resourced.
One third.
That means that for two-thirds of the time, nobody was teaching you, okay? Now, even if you don't know what you're teaching, if you study with the subject better, the fact that you should be there already changes the stakes, you know, for children. So for me, unless you deal with that problem you can't deal with, you know, by using a whip. Mm. That problem you've got to deal with by saying to the teachers union, the dominant teachers union, you cannot every year, you know, play snakes and ladders with the life chances of poor children while you put your own kids in these former model free schools, you know, where there is no disruption, where the parents would go to war if you took one day out of the school calendar. So unless you change that, and that requires a government that says to the unions, it's important to have unions, your job is to take care of your teachers, but your job is not to disrupt the education of the poor. Okay, so let's get that straight. No government since Mandela has been able to look the unions in, and for good reason, you know, politically, because as you know, SATU is part of the Confederation of the SATU, it's the most powerful member, mm-hmm. and the government, like, you know, until recently the Alliance, and they're not going to do things that undermine their own prospects in the ruling party. So, I mean, we know that equation. What I'm concerned about is where are those people within government, within the ruling party, within the opposition, that stand up for the needs of the children first, before the needs of your political party. And that, unfortunately, is not the kind of country we have at the moment.
Well, Prof, there's so much other stuff I want to discuss with you, and if you're around in the next couple of weeks, please let me know, because I want to hear about your experiences of being at Stanford and what you taught them, what they taught you. You're one of those people who's always learning, and you always teach the rest of us through your learning, which is a great experiential transaction, I always find. And it would also be nice to catch up and see what you're up to and what you want to do in the next few years, because when it comes to education, you've been such a guiding light for so many people in South Africa. It would be great to catch up over a longer extended period of time. Thanks for talking to us this morning. I know you're busy, and love to the family.
Thanks, Gareth. Hope to see you soon.
Thanks, okay. Prof. There we go. Prof. Jonathan Janssen from Stellenbosch this morning, talking to us about the state of education at high schools, what matric means, and what universities and free education actually means. Post that. He's always interesting. Always makes a lot of sense, that Prof. Janssen. Okay, we've got a guest coming in just now. She's going to play the violin for us, Mubs. She's not just anybody. You want to hear about her?
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Luca Hart. She's a violinist, and she's got a song or two that we want to play. She's also from Stellenbosch University, where Prof. Janssen just called us from, and composes her own songs, mixes the violin with electronic music. She's been composing, and I always look up to this. I think this is the most incredible talent that there is. The ability to write songs from a young age. She's performed as a session violinist for Hatchet Man, Crimson House, Arno Carstens, many more. And she's been playing at venues across South Africa. So she's here to talk to us this morning. Sounds fun. See ya.
Yeah, boy.
Who's the interview after 8? I forget.
Nontle Tema.
Nontle Tema.
Yeah, boy.
Okay. We spoke to Nontle, what? This is last year? Now take a listen.
Yes.
Nontle's always fun. She's been through some ups and downs, that woman.
Jeez.
She's got some stories to tell. Right?
That's a bit of an understatement, yeah. But yes.
There we go. She's coming up just after 8 o'clock this morning. It's 7:30 on a Friday morning. The weekend is finally here. You can take a big deep breath and
this
relax.
This is the last week of possibly empty streets? I really haven't struggled much with traffic.
Hell no. I was driving around a lot yesterday. It was easy. Long may it last. Maybe there are a whole bunch of people who decided they like it so much on holiday, they're going to stay
on
there.
On the coast and they're staying there?
Let's not complain.
Delightful.
Okay, Selena Gomez and Marshmello. I kid you not. It's called Wolves. Alrighty. You know what I did yesterday? I went to, I said I met up with Anthea. We went to a vegan place.
Oh.
Never done that before.
And?
Well, I mean, I had a salad, so it wasn't a stretch. It wasn't difficult.
Oh, just a salad?
No, just a salad, and I had a cucumber juice.
Hmm.
How's that sound to you? Ben, here's something interesting on that topic. Somebody says, some homework for you, Ben. I want to tell you about an all-vegan football club in England called the Forest Green Rovers. They have 180 solar panels on their stadium roof. Their football pitch is organic. They have a robotic lawnmower and are designing a new stadium to be made almost entirely out of wood.
Oh, thanks. That sounds amazing.
And they, he or she, whoever sent this message to us, it's Dips, I think, said, your homework is to find out if there are any rugby or cricket teams like this, maybe some vegan golfers or tennis players.
I'm going to go with a giant no. Peter Siddle was a vegan cricketer, and everyone made fun of him for eating many bananas every day.
Oh, really?
Rugby players, I'm not sure. Golfers, probably close to no. No, I'll look it up. Looks very interesting. The Green Devils, these guys are called.
Forest Green Rovers is the actual
their nickname, the Green Devils.
And then this is great from someone in Lesotho. Hey guys, at least you know the haters are also listening. I took real effort to listen to your show. Anyway, keep it up. You give me sanity here in Lesotho. So I can't tell if that's actually hate mail or not. Mm-hmm. And then Rachel says, I was listening to cliffcentral.com. The prof's phone line was so bad it sounded like he was underwater. I'm sorry. We'll see if we can clean that up for you in the podcast. But there we go. All right, let's talk to our guest this morning. She's popped in. She's a violinist from Stellenbosch. You got your BA already in music technology, is that right?
Yeah, BA in music technology, which is basically like BMuz, but with extra
music
extra
technology.
Credits.
Okay, I want to hear about that in a second. Let me introduce you properly to everybody. Luca Hart is a violinist. By the way, is that your real name?
Yes. Yeah.
God, what a name. That's a perfect musician name. Doesn't that sound right? Luca Hart. Mm. And now the Grammy goes to Luca Hart.
You
Grammy
are right. Huh? I sounds don't good. Think I lucked out on the this summer. Name thing. You definitely did.
This is very good. So, Luca, thanks for coming in this morning. You brought your violin with, so we'll have you show off a little bit just now, which is great. What is music technology as opposed to just doing a degree in music, like a normal BA Muzz?
Well, it's a relatively new degree, I think, at Stellenbosch especially. And instead of doing music education as a subject, you do music technology, which is recording, learning about the scientific aspects of music. So you go into the very like waveform thingy-majiggies.
Right, you
science.
Talk about
amplitude, wavelength. Things I've forgotten, but can do somehow.
Because each note has a different amplitude and wavelength.
Exactly, and you learn all about acoustics and reverb and how concert halls work and how's the best way to record them and record instruments. And so you also get 3 years that you can use the recording studio to play around with, which
that
was
must be amazing. And then you obviously learn about the equipment that you would use to make those recordings, to manipulate sound, to create new sounds.
Especially.
So that's like science. That's
it's
fantastic.
Science. Production, recording, it's everything put together. Yeah.
All right. And with your own instrument, did you grow up with an interest in music? Have you just got a natural talent? I believe you composed music at a young age.
Yeah. Well, both my parents are music lovers. They didn't do any instruments, but I think I was like the little, I don't know, composer that popped out. There's footage of me like running around the room composing to orchestral recordings in the living room and jumping around. So I think it's something inside me, that wants to be a composer and a conductor and everything.
I'm always curious about people who want to play the violin because it's difficult, first of all.
Mm.
It's a harder instrument to be able to popularize, if you'd like me to be as vulgar as possible about this, because most people go for the guitar or the keyboard or anything else. The violin, to some people, is a restrictive instrument. Mm. It limits you to either doing classical stuff or being
a teacher
or being like a gimmick, you know, in a song. People are like, oh, look, there's, you know, like the sax has become something that people will play along with like EDM music. You've got bands all over the world who are popularizing that kind of thing. I imagine it's going that way for the violin too. There are lots of musicians who use violinists in their stuff. And it's a beautiful instrument. Don't get me wrong. I have no criticism. In fact, I admire people who want to play the violin.
Have you tried playing it?
Are you kidding? What, are you insane? Are
I
you
think
high?
You should.
What's
I
wrong
you
with
should.
You?
That's why I brought it home.
No.
We're going to have a lesson.
So what made you choose the violin?
I actually have no idea. It must have been when I was quite young. Maybe I watched a show and I heard a violin, or I watched somebody playing the violin and that just spoke to me, I guess.
So when did you get your first violin?
When I was 8.
Gee.
Yeah, which is actually quite late for violins. You get them usually starting at like 4 or 5, starting the violin. They can barely hold the little instrument.
Wow.
But I'm actually glad I started.
So you were like a late starter by violin
stats. Late bloomer. Late musical bloomer.
This instrument has a very interesting history. Obviously, there are violins in the world that are the most expensive instruments ever sold.
Jeez.
Those Stradivarius violins that are 400 years old?
Yeah.
300 or 400 years old. And it's the wood.
It's the wood.
It's the ancient wood that they use that makes it such an expensive thing, right?
Yeah, it's also the technique, the way they build it. I mean, this violin is 300 years old.
That
it's
one
not
is.
Not a Stradivarius.
Good
This is
God.
Just, this was built in Bohemia somewhere by a craftsman, you know, somewhere in a Staliki.
Yeah.
On the side of the road. But it's 300 years old and I like it. And it's...
So what is it about the sound of a violin? Because it doesn't exactly hit the note. Like when you pluck a string... Or when you hit a note on a keyboard, it's exactly that note. With a violin,
correct.
You have a little bit of of the sharp and the flat that
exactly.
comes in too, right?
Exactly. And that's what makes it so hard to play and to play in tune from the very beginning.
Because you can easily go off tune.
Completely. We have like a range of... You have so much range, so you have to teach your fingers to put your finger in the exact same place every single time for years and years and years.
So how much practice goes into this?
10,000 hours, of course.
To be a master, that's what Gladwell tells us. You need 10,000 hours, but you must have spent more than that.
I don't know how much it's like.
I mean, how long?
3 hours.
Do you play every day?
Now I mostly compose, so it's more of a creative thing when I pick up my violin. But at school and at varsity, it was easily 3-4 hours a day.
Three
sometimes
or four
five.
Hours a day.
Yeah.
Did that drive your family mad?
I don't know. Maybe they've suppressed it.
You've never asked them?
I've never asked
Never
them.
Said to Mom, Dad, I'm sorry for putting you through pain for so many years.
I teach now, so I think I'm getting it back at me.
Okay, so how young are your youngest students?
4. 4?
Mm. What?
Unfortunately.
Can you identify
I hope
talent?
They're not listening now, the parents.
Can you identify talent at 4?
You can identify musical interest, definitely. A kid that can sing at 4 is definitely like their ears are tuned better. And one that can't even, you know, try and hold a note.
Hmm. Mm. You play in an orchestra sometimes?
I did, but too many hours.
Yeah, that's hard because everybody has to dedicate a large chunk of their time and you have to play together because there's no point in playing separately.
Well, playing together is lovely, but it's about sitting for 3-hour rehearsals and holding your violin. Holding your violin is already the most unnatural position in the world. It's like... permanently having a neck brace to the left.
Does your neck hurt?
Do you sleep
on a certain side?
Yeah, maybe.
Do you?
Maybe, yeah.
Have you ever thought about that? Ever been to like a physiotherapist
I've
and said, am I not aligned?
Yeah, they just send me away and say, I can't help you. It's going to cost you millions.
Because obviously, this, as you say, it's an unnatural position. Your chin has to rest on the violin. It's part of what makes it sound the way it does.
Yeah.
And what are you looking at? The music in front of you?
If you're reading from music, yeah. Otherwise, you just go inside yourself while you're playing.
Because if you look down at that's going to give you like skillwork as well, right?
Skillwork as well. Yeah, and in the orchestra, when you're sitting, it's like also rigid. So, and then you have to have one skillwork on the conductor and one work on the
music.
That's terrible.
It's only got 4 strings.
Yes.
Some people think that's quite rudimentary. You get 6 and 8 string guitars.
Yeah, fancy.
Yeah.
It's about what you can do with 4 strings.
That's right. And that bow, what is that made of? This
bow is horse hair, of course.
The actual
hair, yeah. They've bleached horse hair. I hope it was horses that died because of old age.
Yeah, not ones that were grown for violinists to be harvesting them.
Let's not go there.
All right. So how do you compose on a violin? Is it like composing on a guitar or a keyboard?
You can. So sometimes I hold my violin like a guitar, and then I can play cool things on it. And you can play chords. Whatever. And then you sing over that. Otherwise, you just play, you know, long notes like you would play an actual violin.
All right. Let's go. It's so funny when you do that, that I can't help hearing the word fiddle in my head. Because what is the difference here? I'm Philistine when it comes to this stuff. So when I hear a classical song and I hear the violins going da, 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 or whatever, I can hear that that's a violin. Mm. But when you play like that, is it a fiddle? What
I have
is
no
that?
Idea. I think fiddling is a term that's used for a specific technique in a certain country where they really fiddle. I think they go like absolutely crazy. Almost like an Irish jiggy, whatever. I mean, I stand to correction. People listening might be like, that is not fiddling.
No, it's okay.
But I would maybe as a soloist, if you play on your own, you sort of develop a fiddling technique rather than a classical technique because you constantly have to accompany yourself as well.
You know, Sia, that the first violin is the leader of the orchestra. Did you know that?
No, I did not.
Yeah, they're in charge.
Basically, I'm not classy enough. I don't know any of this.
The most important thing
just
that happens.
You look classy.
Yeah, hold the violin, Sia.
Understand. We'll take an Instagram.
The most important communication in the orchestra is between the first violin and the conductor.
Yeah, I would say so. Well, between every single person.
Is that just traditional, or is it because that's an important role that has to be?
That is an important role because they essentially sort of drive the rest of the players. If something goes wrong, people can look at that person and say.
Okay.
And you also often follow the bow movement of the first violinist to know that you're in place. So if you miss your mark, you just keep bowing the same bow and pretend you're playing.
So when they go up, you go up. When they go down, you go down.
When there's a tricky part.
Sure.
But yeah, every single player needs to look at the conductor. If you're doing it right, you have to memorize your music. You have to be looking at every single cue.
So you mentioned that this violin that you've got here now is 300 years old. So when did you get this, and was it like a thing that you always wanted? Was it something that you'd been saving up for a long time? What's the story behind it?
It sort of fell into my lap through my grandfather. He went to a farm in the Karoo, as he does, and finds things.
Yeah.
And he met a farmer or a boer and found this old violin at the bottom of a chest.
Wow. Did you have to have it refurbished?
Yes, he took it home and had it a little bit worked on and then passed it on to me.
That must be pretty cool.
It is pretty cool.
To be playing something 300 years old. Most people don't even have anything in their house that's 300 years old. You know?
Yeah.
That's like the 1700s.
It is pretty awesome.
Okay, so you play something for us. Show off a little bit.
Okay.
Give us something original, if you'd like, and then something that we might be familiar with. And let's just have some fun.
Can I sing you something?
Of course you can.
Cool. I'm just going to play a little part of a song that's called Rapunzel. It's about feminism.
Oh, all right.
The king's horses and all the king's men have tried for years to bring her down again. She cannot be bought by all of the land, for she holds the world in the palm of her hand. The princess is a vision, her beauty untamed. She puts all the ladies of the kingdom to shame. But what makes her unique, what makes the men drool, is her plan to take over and rule. One by one they climb the tower, but at the top she has the power. One by one they climb the tower, they all will lose, they all will lose, they all will lose as she cuts them loose. As she cuts them loose. Thank you.
Wow.
There you go.
You're playing the violin like a guitar. I love that. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
You wrote that, you composed the lyrics, you did everything.
Yeah.
So, what do people think? Are there purists who say to you shouldn't do that with a violin?
Probably. But they are purists for a reason.
Yeah. And do you play other instruments?
I play the violin. The piano, the mandolin.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The mandolin I have, because it's tuned exactly like a violin.
Yes.
It's a little bit more like a guitar, so I can actually strum it properly without hurting the violin. So I use that when I have to strum and all do all like the, chicka-chicka-chicka-chicka-chicka things.
What's more complicated to play among the string instruments?
Among all the string instruments?
Mm. What do you think the most complicated? I mean, the harp, they say, is impossible.
Cheapers. Yeah, well, that's... Yeah.
Because you have the two layers of strings going in opposite directions, right? Yeah, so someone who plays the harp has to almost have a brain that's working both sides at the same time.
Freaky brain. Yeah. Well, I would put violin right up there of the string instruments, but all string instruments are essentially hard because of that pitching thing.
Mm.
Because you can't just put your finger on a note.
Yeah. You have to find that note.
Yeah.
So you have obviously got a musical ear in that you can hear when the note is in the right place.
Yeah,
does it offend you when you hear in a song that someone is flat or sharp?
It depends what song. I mean, radio, yes.
Yeah.
Because they have all the technologies to make it not flat. And also, if somebody is at that point where they record in studio, you want them to sing properly.
Get it right. Auto-tune.
Or do it 10 times until it's right.
Can you hear a note and identify it immediately?
I can only find A, which is my violin note, just because I've tuned it for millions and millions of years.
So can you sing an A?
I think that's close. No. Off today. It's too early.
Okay.
I blame it on the time.
All right. But you think of a song and you think of where that song starts and that's the note.
Mm.
So it's not like you've just got, you're pulling the waveform out of the air and your ear is analyzing it. You're going, oh, that's an A.
No. Sometimes. No. Sometimes if I'm really in the zone already, playing music for a few hours, then they're all there.
That's a very cool song, that Rapunzel.
Thank you.
Are you a feminist?
Not an extreme feminist.
No, but
just
I mean...
Just a normal, healthy dose of...
Nothing wrong with that.
Healthy dose of standing up.
We don't have a problem here with that, do we?
Of course not.
Mubs, yeah. Ben.
What's that?
What about when it comes to playing kind of songs that people know? Is there pressure on your side to either do it differently or to stick to the original and deliver exactly what they're expecting to hear?
There's always pressure, but I still believe a cover song is only a cover song if you do it differently. You bring something new to the audience, I mean, they can go listen to the recording if they want to. But if you bring something else, and especially if you could make it better, either by changing the atmosphere completely, like taking a really kiff song, mm-hmm. taking the lyrics, which are actually very sad, turning it into a sad song, and you bring out the meaning of the lyrics, and people are like, oh my word, that's what the song is about.
Wow.
So that's a cool
that
way
could
of
involve
covering.
Changing tempo, it could involve
exactly
changing a starting note even, it could involve reassigning the arrangement of the instruments. Okay.
So for example, at first I was afraid, I was petrified, never could I live without you by my side. And I spent so many nights thinking how you did me wrong. But I grew strong. Walk on now, out the door, don't turn around. You're not welcome anymore. You were the one who broke me with goodbye. What do you think? I lay down and die.
Wow.
Etc.
You changed that up.
Yeah, so that's a freaking sad song.
Sia was about to do a disco dance, and
yeah,
now he suddenly
to break up the
night.
Shoulder pads for that.
Yeah, so that's completely different. But
play something that we would expect to hear a violinist be able to play.
Oh, like a super classical thing.
Yeah.
Well, are you feeling in the mood for gypsy or very classical? Like,
go very, and then we'll pull back to gypsy. Come on, we've got time. We can do both.
Oh, my hands are shaking.
No, don't. What for? You nervous? This is the instrument you've been holding since you were like eight, nine years old.
I'm ramping up my vibrato technique.
Okay, go on. beautiful. That's so magnificent. What piece is that again?
That's Meditation from Ties by Massenet.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
All right, so now the gypsy stuff, what do you mean by that? That's more like what I was saying earlier about when you're almost like fiddling, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, and it's kind of happy and cheerful and
yeah,
you kind of imagine, nomads in Europe.
Nomads, like
caravans.
Standing on the road and begging, you know, for some coins.
With like a duck on their head.
Exactly.
Yeah, all right. And
are you going to throw coins
doing
at me
tarot cards, yeah. All right, let's go. Let's hear this. Sarabande, right?
Charles.
Fantastic. Wow. Is it harder to play sort of cold when you haven't warmed up?
For sure. I'm sitting in a bloody sofa here.
We could have made you stand.
Oh, I'm kidding.
So you have to warm up.
Yeah.
You can't just go straight into it.
Yeah.
You just have that instrument. It's almost organic, the instrument in your hands. It's like an extension of you.
Mm. Yeah.
Is that how you know that you've got to a stage where you and your violin...
Definitely. There were stages where I didn't enjoy practicing because it was, I think, varsity and it takes the soul out of the playing. And only years after that, when I picked up my violin, it was about the violin and me. It's like we have a relationship. This is my biggest love. When I pick it up, I can deal with
stuff. Will you ever love a human as much as you love your violin?
Maybe it's a good thing not to.
Yeah, a violin's not going to hurt you,
it's
right?
It's not going to run away, right?
All right, so you've written a bunch of songs, you've actually released music, and you produce music, and you do a lot of gigs all over the country.
Yes. Yeah.
So what's some of the interesting stuff you've done collaboration-wise?
Ooh, live performance-wise, I've performed with Crimson House, they're a very cool gypsy jungle band.
Yeah.
Performed with Gerald Clark, performed with Arno Carstens, which is amazing. Kirsten Bosch, you know, New Year's concert, that was pretty awesome.
That's nice. This year?
2 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I'm always collaborating with whoever needs a violinist and a cool violin solo on stage. They get me to play for them.
And can people come and see you? Are you doing any gigs that we need to know about in the next while?
Well, in my personal capacity, I haven't organized the next one. I'm still deciding what's the best platform for the next one.
You said, you're teaching, you're studying, you're doing all of this stuff at the same time.
But I am performing with Crimson House at Up the Creek, which is end of
this cool.
month.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's good.
That should be fun.
And tell me about the song Ebb and Flow.
Ooh. So that's the title track of my album, my debut album, which has 5 tracks on. And that was the first song I started experimenting putting production to the violin. So making a electronic backtrack of sorts on a theme, a violin theme that I composed. And really starting from the bottom. So putting the theme in Logic Pro, which is a recording program, and then deciding what instruments to put under that, what electronic sounds, what drum samples, everything. And then ended up with Ebb and Flow.
You're kind of like those producer DJs.
Yeah, exactly.
I think this is so cool that you take something that's old and you figure it into something that's new and create something that's unique.
Mm.
Brilliant. Well, I'm very happy to meet you and thanks for coming in to spend some time with us.
Yeah, lovely to be here.
And I hope we'll see you again soon and people can find out more social media. You're on there.
Absolutely everywhere. Instagram, you can download and buy all the music on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play.
Yeah, if you want to hear it, I'm going to play Ebb and Flow for you now so you can get a feel for this.
Awesome.
Then we're going to come back, wrap it up with the news, and head over to our interview with Nonhle Tema. All of that's coming up. So thank you so much for coming in to see us, Luca.
Thank you.
Luca Hart, everybody. How do I find you on Twitter or Instagram?
Just Luca Hart or Luca Hart Music.
Brilliant. What a name. I'm telling you, this is destined for Grammys. All right, so that's Luca Hart. Here's the song Ebb and Flow, and news coming up. That's Luca Hart's Ebb and Flow. We've got a couple of messages here. Someone says, wow, her voice is amazing. Damn, I'm in love, Veinand. And then Michelle says, Gareth, please ask her to play your favorite violin piece. I can't remember what it's called. It's actually a cello piece by Bach. Don't worry about that. Well, there's lots of time for us to talk shit about that. And then Kay says, oh my God, this piece has just brought a tear to my eye. Isn't that nice? Wow, amazing, says somebody else. And suddenly feel like dancing, says someone else, with swords. That was obviously with the sardas. All right, so beautiful. There we go. A little bit of something different this morning. Always fascinating to find out from someone who is so proficient, so skilled in not just her discipline of being able to master the violin, but also to be able to compose music and to mix different genres and the science of music. It's always interesting stuff. Let's wrap it up with the news this morning. Find out what's going on in the world and what you can pretend to know about when you get to the coffee machine today and the irritating people standing around it and they're all talking about bullshit like the Kardashians. You can say... Internal fighting has continued to hamper the Democratic allies. Senior members are calling for a boycott to the proposed drought tax that the rest of the party are calling for. Things went from bad to worse yesterday as it suddenly was decided that Uber Eats was meant to replace Mr. Delivery in delivering daily lunch items to party headquarters. The drought they will overcome, but this latest issue could literally derail the party ahead of 2019. Oh, the DA. Members of the ANC Youth League are calling for Batabile Dlamini to step down because she is old. They say she's particularly old in the mornings after late nights with senior ANC delegates. Some even claim that she enjoys getting old and that the more she denies being old, the more it confirms that she can't control how old she's getting. Replace the word old for anything you like there. Finally, the Eurasia Cup has just begun and a Ryder Cup type golfing event where Europe will take on the best of Asia is what it is. The Europeans are huge favorites, but the Asians will be hoping to score a major upset with talents like Lo Tit Hung, I Suck You, and Fat Young Twat, who are making up the debut team there in the cup. Very exciting. We're waiting with bated breath just around the corner. Nonhle Tema is a well-known South African celebrity with a hell of a story. She's someone we have sat down with a couple of times. In fact, in July, I think we spoke to her. And here it is, for your pleasure this morning, Nonhle Tema on a Friday. Don't forget, there's lots of good stuff on cliffcentral.com through the course of today, including the Casper Radio Show, those two lunatics from the Just Now Comedy Show, which is coming up at 9, and Sex with Jonty, among other things. Plenty to keep you entertained and informed.
This is CliffCentral.com.